Welcome back to Season 2 of the Tourism Geographies Podcast, a podcast that showcases research published in Tourism Geographies, a peer-reviewed journal which explores tourism and tourism-related areas of recreation and leisure studies from a geographic perspective. I'm Maartje Roelofse, one of the producers of episodes for the show, and I come to you from Wageningen University and Research in the Netherlands. Welcome, listeners of the Tourism Geographies podcast. My name is Maartje Roelofse, and I'm one of the hosts on the podcast team. With me here today is Olga Hannonen, researcher at the University of Eastern Finland. Olga has recently published an article in Tourism Geographies titled Emergent Geographies of Digital Nomadism, Conceptual Framing, Insights and Implications for Tourism. The article will be part of the 25th anniversary special issue On the Verge, the State of the Art in Tourism Geographies. As I always do, I'd like to ask the podcast speaker to introduce themselves. Olga, could you tell us a little more about your background and research trajectory?
Sure. Hello, everyone. I'm Olga Hannonen, and I'm a researcher at the University of Eastern Finland. I'm also an honorary research associate at the Royal Holloway University of London. And I regard myself as a lifestyle researcher, as a person who studies people who travel for lifestyle. I started as a second home researcher, and I did my PhD on that. So when we talk about second home tourism or second home mobility, we talk about people purchasing properties that are used for recreational purposes. And second home might not be a very familiar concept for many, so in different national contexts, you can know second homes under the names as summer cottages, vacation homes, chalets, or summer houses, you name it. And I did that in international context. So I looked at international second home property purchases, second home tourism. In my PhD and in my postdoc, I had a chance to go to Spain and to expand my second home expertise into lifestyle migration and looked at German-speaking nationals purchasing properties in Spain, in particular in Gran Canaria, and migrate to these properties part of the year. And as I said, looking at human mobilities for lifestyle reasons, for better quality of life, I turned my attention in 2017 to digital nomads, as there have been some media publicity on the topic. The research interest on that was just started, and there was very shallow information that you could really dig out on the topic. So, and that's how it started to intrigue me, that if we look at second home mobilities and the lifestyle migration, they signify attachment to a particular place, a permanent connection to a place where they keep coming back from time to time. But when we look at digital nomadism, then we see a complete detachment, a very mobile lifestyle that do not really root in a specific location. So this is how I progressed to digital nomadism. And in 2020, that was really the first special issue on digital nomads. And this is where I think the research interest and research in digital nomadism has expanded.
Wonderful. Thanks, Olga, for that introduction. In the article that we're discussing today, we're going to talk about digital nomadism. And what you do in this paper is really great. You outline the history and emergence of this relatively new phenomenon. For our general audience, what is digital nomadism in your understanding? And why is it an interesting and important topic to address in current times?
Let's divide digital nomads and digital nomadism. These are two concepts. So digital nomads is a rapidly growing group of international travelers that we cannot really ignore anymore. And I defined digital nomad or digital nomads as a class of highly mobile professionals whose work is location independent. This is why they travel on a semi-permanent basis, and they work while traveling, and vice versa, they travel while working. And digital nomadism is a term to define this lifestyle of these highly mobile professionals. So I think it's important and interesting topic to address, as it demonstrates a change in how we travel and work. So nowadays we see that one can take work when he or she travels. So, and this is has been largely boosted by the pandemic. It started as a niche phenomenon before the pandemic, and once everybody, well, not everybody, but many professionals found out that they can be remote, they do not have to be rooted in a specific location. So this is why people can stay longer in their travel destinations, as they do not need to come back in office to finish their work after, let's say, a week of vacation. And digital nomads take this work while traveling trend much further and turn it into lifestyle. As I said, they're traveling on a semi-permanent basis. So some do that on an ongoing basis without having a specific motivations to, let's say, go back home or visit friends and relatives. Others maybe travel within specific locations and during the year, just choose a couple of locations during the year. So, and in such a manner, because of this specific group, we see rapid changes in destinations. We see that specific infrastructure has been developed, specific services offered, and even specific visa policies. So these are both private industry changes, private services that are offered, but also public policy changes like visa policies. These are state-induced changes. And that's what is regarded to changing traveling patterns. But in relation to work, we see an increasing number of professionals who decide to try out this lifestyle during the pandemic. And as studies show that during the pandemic, we see the diversification of digital nomads, the group of digital nomads. So before the pandemic, there were young, single Westerners, strong passport holders who are in their late 20s, 30s, 40s. So during the pandemic, we could also see that families with children were practicing this lifestyle, as well as so-called corporate workers or traditional office employees who have always been working in an office, and they started to try out this lifestyle as well. So, and also we see the diversification of traveling patterns, and that I call myself subcategories of digital nomadism, such as workations, when someone go into a vacation location to work, and remote work travel. And remote work travel is regarded to domestic digital nomadism during the pandemic, and specifically in the Finnish context. So, and some, as I regard this vacation and remote work travel as subcategories of digital nomadism, so people do not constantly travel, but they maybe take a month, a week, or 2 months, a year to go to a specific location or to travel destination and work. And some researchers regard this as digital nomadism as well, and these types of travel. Also, we see some evidence, again, very, we need more research on that, but some evidence suggests that those who embrace these lifestyles are reluctant to go back to traditional office work, even if that would include salary raise. So again, So we see the change in working culture here and the way we travel. So this is why I think it's important and very interesting phenomenon to study.
Wonderful. Thanks, Olga. That's also interesting. And in relation to that, I think what emerges also through much of the literature is that digital nomadism seems to be a deliberate choice, often made by people with the political right to mobility and the means to mobility, the financial means to mobility. I often wondered if digital nomadism is also, at least partially, the result of unfavorable conditions in people's countries of residence. And here I'm thinking housing crises, energy crises that make it increasingly difficult for people to afford to work in places, or neoliberal management of workplaces where offices, etc., are increasingly seen as expenses that can better be offloaded on employees. You've just described a number of reasons related to developments in tourism and work, but what would you say are the general motivations of people to embark on this kind of lifestyle? And are there also similar reasons to stop?
That's a very good question. Yeah, well, it's important to point out that several factors facilitated the development of this phenomenon and contributed to digital nomadism. So we first have to think about the technological advancement, right? That we have portable digital technologies and connectivity these days. Also, international connectivity in terms of travel, international travel possibilities have become available for wider groups and connect different, very remote locations nowadays. We also see the change in nature of work. We see work flexibilization as we have the remote work phenomenon, telecommuting, and workplace diversification, meaning that we do not just have a dedicated desk anymore, but also hot desking and ways to accomplish work somewhere else than in a designated workplace. So these have been there on the background to facilitate the development of digital nomadism. But we also should not forget the reasons that you have mentioned, the growing costs of living in Western societies in general, precarity of employment, exhaustion, and specific working conditions that also act as push factors for this phenomenon. So there's a combination of several factors and, let's say, this negative developments or increasing energy prices and cost of living in general are among them as well.
Wonderful. Thanks for highlighting that. Yes. Another really interesting part of your paper is how you explain how nation states and destinations are very eager to capitalize on digital nomadism by creating specific infrastructure to attract them. You argue in your paper that destinations and places are very central, but in scholarly work and public debate, the question of place is only marginally discussed. So digital nomads are supposedly detached and placeless, so we kind of lose sight of place. What do you think have been the major impacts of digital nomadism on places? What are the major challenges also?
Yeah, when we think about impact of digital nomads on places, usually we end up seeing two streams of discussions, either positive or negative ones. So from the one hand, some studies and media publicity in particular emphasize the potential of the phenomenon on in different locations. As I've mentioned, there is specific infrastructure that has been developed for this group of travelers. We talk about co-working, co-living spaces, there's specific service development. We talk about retreats, get together, meetups, other events. So these developments, they create new jobs and contribute to local economies. And also what we see is the importance of the international travel that is locally available and is of great interest for local stakeholders to somehow utilize this group of highly skilled professionals that arrive to specific location. What I find also interesting is the spin-off effect of this global trend that, for example, in the paper I bring an example of Japan, where they started to design vacation packages for employees who can work flexibly. And these packages are crafted by local governments at prefecture levels to bring employees, flexible employees, out of the cities to different regions and to promote in such a way migration to different regions. So in such a manner, what is has started as a global mobile phenomenon is now in a domestic Japanese context, is used to fulfill certain regional development goals and showing the attempt to utilize these flexible working trends and travel trends at the local or domestic level. That's what regards the positive side of impacts. But on the other hand, we see also some studies and specifically media publicity about negative sides of digital nomadism. And it's been claimed that digital nomads, they do not make any meaningful connection with the destinations. They pass through locations and they support their lifestyle at the expense of local communities. So this specific infrastructure that is created for them is actually supporting this bubble-like existence. So they end up have been in these co-working bubbles or co-living bubbles and in a specific destination, forming, let's say, communities within communities. Also, another stream of publicity has been on existing problems that have been caused by tourism. And in such locations like Barcelona, Lisbon, or for example, island of Bali. And among the major claims can be mentioned the gentrification, displacement of local businesses, proliferation of short-term rentals, and general increase in rental prices and housing crisis. So, however, many scholars agree that while digital nomads contribute to these negative effects and trends that have been caused by tourism and other phenomena, they are really the cause of these very issues like increasing, growing housing prices or gentrification issues. It turns out that these negative consequences are collective outcome of state policies and local planning, but we see that digital nomads are contributing, unfortunately, to these issues.
Great. So thank you for pointing out these challenges. In relation to that, your article also points out some future directions for research regarding digital nomadism, also highlighting some of these points. For our listening audience, do you have any suggestions how we can approach this topic and also the kind of methodologies that we can use to study this phenomenon?
Yeah, in my paper, I call for turning the attention to place, or speaking in tourism terms, to destinations of digital nomads, how they inhabit and impact those locations and issues around co-working enclaves, specific meetups that create these bubbles, coffee shop spaces that produce social spatial segregation. They impact and augment places, and this requires further investigation to see what is actual impact of digital nomads on that. I suggest to approach digital nomadism from a place-based perspective to show how places are co-constructed by movement of people, capital, ideas, objects, how places are made, performed, transformed by these different types of movements. Also, a place-based perspective can actually, looking at a place, we can also better understand different movements, different mobilities on a global scale, how certain mobilities come to specific locations, and what are behind these processes. So I argue that places are connected to larger systems and global dynamics, global shifts. So we can, by looking at place, we can better understand social economic shifts, these background processes that affect population movements, issues of precarity, issues of safety, inequalities, both in the global south and in global north. And again, looking at places, we can better understand the impacts of digital nomadism on specific places. And when it comes to methodology, I think the application of so-called local, the application of global ethnography is a good approach to work with, to be embedded in a specific place, but actually looking at what processes are unfolding globally by looking at a specific location. Yeah, as we see growing impact on destinations and claims that digital nomads enhance existing problems, I see that a field experiment can be a suitable approach that could trigger a positive change in a specific location, something that could connect digital nomads with locals in some ways and possibly alleviate some negative impacts. So global ethnography and field experiment, I think, something that we could use in the very near future to look at the phenomena.
Great, thanks for those suggestions, Olga. I also found lots of inspiration in your article to think about digital nomadism as an analytics, as a framework for understanding home. Not just in the sense that digital nomadism implies making home on the move or making home in tourist destinations, but also how, vice versa, digital nomadism provokes reflection on what makes home countries less desirable to work and to live in, or how they are made unhomely. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I wanted to thank you, Olga. Many thanks for this interview. It's been a real pleasure to have you here as one of the key experts globally on digital nomadism.
Thank you, Marcia, for inviting me and having me today.
Many thanks also, Tourism Geography's podcast listeners, for tuning in. Make sure to check out Olga's article on the Tourism Geography's website and stay tuned for our upcoming podcast episodes. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Tourism Geography's podcast. We look forward to you joining us again next week. I'm Marcia Rudolfsen. Bye for now.